Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Summer is upon us, and you know what that means, lots of tropical cocktails. So I will focus for the next couple of months, like I did last summer, on bartenders who specialize in these kinds of drinks, tropical, tiki, etc. What's the etc.? Well, we'll find out over the course of the next couple of months. It's Mo's tropical summer, so get ready for an exotic getaway of the cocktail variety via the Music and Booze with Mo podcast. Join me today as we talk to Ryan Lotz, who is the beverage director for Traveler Street Hospitality, which includes, among the many bars he oversees, Boston's Shore Leave. So we're going to talk with him about the bar scene in Boston and having a tropical bar in the basement of a building and pivoting to having a tropical patio during the wet spring months of COVID this past year, and a bunch of other things. We'll talk about his marching band days, he plays saxophone, that makes me very happy, and charitable works, and geez, just so much. So stick around, we've got Ryan from Shore Leave. Well, introduce yourself, and I know you're more than just Shore Leave. So
I am. Yeah, I'm actually at our other restaurant today, which is called Bar Bitsana, and it's celebrating its 5-year anniversary today.
Yay, actually. Congratulations after this.
I know, we survived. But yeah, 5-year anniversary here at Bar Bitsana, which is nuts, of course, because of COVID and staffing, we're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. So the restaurant is celebrating its 5-year anniversary just
and it's empty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
Let's see.
Tell us who you are. You're Ryan.
So my name is Ryan Lotz. I am the beverage director for Traveler Street Hospitality, which is a restaurant company here in Boston. We have three locations, four concepts. So Bar Mazzana, which I was just talking about, is our first, which is an Italian restaurant that we opened 5 years ago today. And after that, we opened Shore Leave, which we initially opened as a tiki bar, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit.
Yeah.
And then inside of Shore Leave, we have a small 9-seat omakase sushi concept.
Oh, yeah.
Called No Relation. And then maybe 9 months after we opened Shore Leave, if I'm correct, we opened a like lunch and dinner 7-day a week kind of American brasserie, we call it, called Black Lamb, which is kind of our like everyday go-to neighborhood spot, which is in the South End as well. So all the restaurants are Bar Matana and Shore Leave are directly across the street from each other. Shore Leave is just across the street this way, but
that's handy.
Lights down in the basement. Yes, it's very, very handy. And Black Lamb is a 10-minute walk in that direction.
Which oh, is also lovely.
Yes, I know. I don't know how people open restaurants in like multiple cities. sometimes yeah, I have to go across the street.
Yeah, right. How many miles do you clock every day, like in non-pandemic times, you know?
Oh my God. I think that my record number of walks back and forth, I did 5 round trip visits from our kind of central hub of Bar Matana and Shore Leave to Black Lamb when we were opening Black Lamb.
And that doesn't count all the walking you did within those spaces once you were there,
yes,
right?
Exactly. let's see what else. The company is owned by 3 partners. The chef owner's name is Colin Lynch. The front of house operator is his wife Heather. And then they have a partner named Jefferson, who's kind of the back of house operations for the whole company. And that's basically
it. Well, let's talk about
that's
you.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Well, when did you become a bartender? When did that happen for you?
I have a degree from Boston University in art history with a minor in business administration because I thought that I wanted to run art galleries. Mm-hmm. and then I interned at a couple of art galleries and I was like, this is awful. I hate it.
Right.
Like I applaud people who want to exist in that world. And it was not for me. Yeah. So I did that for a little while as an intern. And then when I decided I didn't want to do that anymore, I was like, well, I probably should make some money instead of working for free. And I grew up in New York City doing catering. So I just started doing catering in Boston. Mm-hmm. And then I got a restaurant job after I had done some catering when I had a little bit more experience. And then the restaurant I was working at the time needed a bartender. And I was willing to be trained to do so. I was 20 years old at the time. I was like, I'll learn how to make drinks. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And that restaurant didn't really have much of a bar program, but the person who was running it was really super open to it just being completely changed. And I started just like voraciously reading cocktail books and kind of just changed that whole program, like bit by bit by bit. I always called it my like field of dreams bar. If you make it, they will come. Because it definitely did not have cocktail people coming to it at that time. Mm-hmm. And by the time I left, it was like a super, super well known as a restaurant cocktail destination.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I did that all the way up until maybe a year after I graduated from BU. Mm-hmm. And then I opened up Jackson Cannon's bar, the Hawthorne.
Wow.
Also in Boston. So I was on the opening staff there as one of the bartenders. And I kind of quickly fell out of love with like just straight cocktail bartending life. I really missed wine and food. Mm-hmm. And so from there I went to Number 9 Park, which is Barbara Lynch's kind of flagship company, which is how I met all of the folks that do these restaurants because we all worked there. Mm-hmm. And I worked at Number 9 Park for almost 4 years. And there are people who were there much, much longer than me. And I don't know how anyone does that. It is an incredible place to work. It is like finishing school for bartenders and servers. You just, you know, you're learning every single day. There's like a 45-minute meeting where you learn about or taste some kind of wine or a cocktail or spirits or, you know, so I learned a ton. But after 3.5 years, I was like, okay, this is really fancy. And I'm not really like a vest and a tie
guy. Yeah.
Guy in the rest of my life. So this feels like I'm a bit of a fraud. So I left and I did bar mitzvah and now I wear t-shirts. So I did that and it was really great. I fell in love with wine. I already liked wine a lot, but I really fell in love with wine. It's where I met, kind of my mentor in the wine industry, Kat Saleri, who's just a sweet, incredibly gifted angel in the wine world. And that's what landed me here. And
now you can have fun. You can have fun with your...
I can have fun. I mean, not to say that number nine wasn't fun. It was a lot of fun. Absolutely. I met some great friends.
The non-tie version of fun.
The non-tie version of fun.
The non-tie invest version.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the fact that you became a beverage director for a tropical bar, which tend to be the funnest of all drinks, the funnest and the most cumbersome, in my opinion, because
funny how that works, isn't it?
You have to put all the garnishes and the decorations on them, but that poor bartender has got like 12 different ingredients they're trying to balance.
Yes.
So when you started with this restaurant group, then that was when you were in charge. Finally, this was like, you took everything that you'd learned.
I was managing the bar at number nine, with a pretty loose range that nobody really was like, we were doing tropical drinks at number nine park. There was actually a pretty big focus on trying to make number nine as fun as possible. And I was well, if we send drinks out in tropical mugs, people will have fun. And also I just want to watch people eating their like $150 tasting menu with a mug on their table.
With like a dolphin mug on their table, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Having the palm fronds sticking out or something.
Totally, like paper umbrellas and everything. You're gonna have that cocktail and then you're gonna spend $300 on a bottle of burgundy. It's gonna be great.
You're gonna love it. That neon coconut is just gonna really reflect what's going on now.
so we did number nine, and then kind of as a joke, the partners at we did Bar Mitzvah, and then kind of as a joke, the partners at Bar Mitzvah were like, we're looking to throw like a fun New Year's Day party. And we know that you like tropical drinks. And I mean, you know, at the time we said tiki drinks.
Yeah.
Willing, you know, freely.
Yeah.
And they were like, what if we do a Magnum PI themed brunch? Cause you love this and you already have a mustache.
I was going to say,
and I was like, I think they thought that I was going to just like shoot it down immediately. And I was like, that sounds really fun. Can I rent frozen Drake machines?
Nice.
And so we've done it. We've done Magnum PI brunch every year, except for last year, because of COVID. And it has been super, super fun. And then,
ring in the new year is with Magnum.
Yeah, it's always like the most hellish 48 hours of my life because New Year's Eve is always super, super busy for the restaurants. But then between New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, we like take inventory so that we can start the fiscal year with a proper inventory. I like sit there with a spectrometer or a refractometer measuring frozen drink sugar levels to make sure everything freezes right for the next morning. But it's always a blast. And like, there's always hilarious photos of like,
I'm so going to go
super, super tired at the end.
I'm going to be looking for that. The only time I did a Magnum related thing, cause I've got a Magnum shirt, but it's a girl Magnum shirt. I actually found it in Kauai at a store and it was dead stock. It was like from the '80s, tiny little shoulder pads in it. That's how you knew it was from the '80s, but the same fabric, but cut for a woman. And I was so excited when I got it and I went to a party and I remember they had little fake mustaches for people. And I was just like, man, if I could have just not waxed for a couple of weeks, I'd be right up there with you. You know,
we do the same thing. We have fake mustaches around the whole restaurant for people.
I love it.
It is a blast.
It's super fun.
It's a super, super fun party. And
that
party was just kind of what
the
catalyst for wanting to do Shore Leave. We wanted to do there's a development across the street. So where we're located in Boston was kind of this like corner of the city that a lot of people didn't come to. It was, it's kind of this weird triangle where South Boston, Chinatown, and the South End all meet. It's technically part of the South End, but it was like this weird estranged corner of the South End. And it's being developed as so many other places in Boston are. And the place across the street had talked to us about maybe doing our second restaurant on their ground floor, but it didn't really pan out. And then they said, well, we have this basement space that nobody's rented yet. Do you want to take a look at it? And we all kind of were like, it's a basement. What can we really do down there? And then we were like, well,
tiki bar.
A tiki bar. Normally you're going to black out the windows in a tiki bar anyway.
Exactly.
So if you just don't start with any, then you're fine. And
those
so that's how we started
spaces,
Shoreleave.
Yeah. They, those spaces lend themselves to transformation.
And it's, I mean, it is like, it's such an interesting, Shoreleave is, the entrance is on a side street. It's not the busiest side street. It is the like corner of the building that like the garage doors are on. It is, you walk in, there's like very, very little signage, and it's two floors down. So you're kind of going down the stairs, and many people have echoed like, am I going in the right direction? Or am I like, what's happening? But because it's two stories down, the ceilings are actually like 20 feet high. They're actually taller than the ceilings in here. So you almost feel, I always describe it as kind of like being in the ballroom on a cruise ship. Because you know you're subterranean, but it's huge. And so, you know, we were able to put a roof inside of part of the bar.
You know,
actually like multiple roofs over parts of the bar. The bar is almost, it's almost 40 seats long, which is, you know, huge by Boston standards, at least.
That's amazing.
You know, it's a big space. Yeah.
So is it more of a nautical kind of theme down there then than tiki, or is this something that's been slightly transforming during this time? You know, we could talk about, I think people still say tiki cocktails. I mean, I still say tiki and tropical cocktails. That's okay. It's more of the culture
that
needs to be addressed.
I think that's exactly it. You know, there are so many indigenous communities and so many Pacifica and Oceanic and Native Islander communities that have been talking about the way that this culture has kind of been harmful to them over the course of years, that I think it's important to listen. And, you know, there are people doing this work, right? I'm no expert, right? If people want to really dig into this work, they should follow Doom Tiki on Instagram. They should not listen to what Chalky Tom is talking about. They should follow the Pacifica Project.
Yeah.
They should absolutely be seeing, you know, what the folks from the Pacifica Project are talking about. The Pacifica Project has, I mean, just an absurd amount of resources that they have compiled for folks.
And they've had some good guidance too, in that the gentleman who's part of it, Steve, I'm forgetting his name.
Sam.
Yeah. One thing he said to me that really struck me was, if people want to have a tiki bar, have a tiki bar. We want to educate you so that you know, what you're looking at, what you're going into. Have fun, be respectful. That's the end thing. So like you, I'm just like, if I'm hurting somebody's feelings, I'm not going to do this.
there is a really famous, I've talked about this a million times. There's a really famous, Dolly Parton used to do something called the Dixie Stampede.
Yes.
And she very quietly took Dixie off of the Dixie Stampede. And now she just calls it the Stampede. And there's a very famous quote. First of all, anytime Dolly Parton's talking about something like this, everybody should be listening, because she is the most correct person on the face of the planet.
She really is.
Protect Dolly at all costs.
Yeah, totally.
Dolly said, well, if people are saying you're doing something that hurts them, then you should listen.
And, no, exactly. And that's why my wording is, if it's hurting somebody's feelings, because I heard her say that. And I'm like, that is exactly the way to phrase it.
It's really funny. I don't know if you kind of have tracked the comments on that Facebook post or the comments on there are so many.
And was it the one when you announced that you guys were shifting your focus?
Yes. There are so many people who think that we're trying to come for their good time. And, you know, the reality is, like, I still want our bar to be fun. I still want you to have a good time. I'm still going to put your cocktail in a coconut mug, and it's going to be tasty. Like, we're making all the same drinks.
We're not drinking out of anyone's god anymore. You know,
we're just getting rid of a few things that other people have said. That's not respectful.
It's fine tuning.
Fine tuning. And the funny thing is, a lot of people were commenting like, I can't wait to see these big changes. And I'm like, there's actually not that many big changes. We pulled a lot of mugs off the shelves, but Shoreleave already was, pretty careful from the get-go to not want to create any further harm or be disrespectful in any way to these indigenous Pacific Island communities. And so Shoreleave is lots of dark wood, very kind of richer green tones, we have this like really very lush tropical wallpaper that is through different parts of the space. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of kind of very, very Palm Springs-y details in the space. Originally the designers wanted to use these very interesting ventilation blocks that are really typically seen all over Palm Springs, the concrete blocks that are actually like
breeze blocks
pattern, like exactly.
Yeah.
And we had this like whole kerfuffle about how all the blocks were going to be brought downstairs and how expensive it was going to be to get them and like who was going to be able to put them in and how and why and when. And they ended up doing was, well, they actually found this solution that I actually love even more is they had someone laser cut the ventilation block patterns into panels of wood. And so inside of the space, we have these panels of wood that kind of act as screens between different areas of the restaurant. And then
that's gorgeous.
At the very front entrance of the restaurant, they had this like really genius idea. They boxed out this archway and it has this ventilation block pattern on all three sides. And they hung these black curtains on the inside. And on the inside, on the other side of the curtains, they found these lights that imitate torches and fire. So there's
that's cool.
Like fire lit curtain at the beginning, at the entrance of the space. And when you walk down the stairs, you walk down two flights. The only thing you see when you walk in the front door is the host stands and kind of a light fixture. Mm-hmm. And you don't even actually get those fire lights until you walk up to the host stand, you turn right. And inside of the archway, you see the whole space with 40 seats of the bar stretching. So
nice.
It's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
So it is very, it's the design of the space is very kind of slick and pared back.
So that's good. So do I see a pineapple on your arm? Do you have a pineapple tattoo? Woohoo, look at that. Now, is that for hospitality?
I have my bartender card.
I was going to say. It's your hospitality.
I've always loved it as a sign of hospitality and kind of what it stands for. But I also, the person that I kind of credit with being one of my biggest mentors in the industry, the reason I fell in love with kind of tiki drinks and tropical cocktails was largely because of him. His name is Scott Marshall, and he now has a bar in Savannah, Georgia called the Alley Cat Lounge.
Ooh, that's an awesome name.
It's an awesome name. And he's an incredible bartender. I worked with him at the Hawthorne. And, you know, you're in the industry, and I don't know how long you've been doing bar stuff, but
back
in the day, like when I was first starting to bartend, cocktails were so serious, and like the look on guests' faces when the drinks got too serious was just like such a downer. And Scott would always be like, this doesn't have to be that serious. Here's here's a jet pilot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can have
here's something
drink.
On fire.
Yeah. Here's a jet pilot. It has an umbrella in it and a cherry and mint and it's on fire. And like, and I just wanted to do that. I was like, I don't need to make people like overproof old fashions that they that they like don't know how to drink yet. I'm totally happy making people like blue drinks.
Charitable stuff, aren't you? I mean, this kind of leans back to music because I feel like when I've looked at Shoreleaf stuff in the past before pandemic, I feel like you guys had some sort of tropical disco party or something that was a charitable thing. Am I just imagining that?
We did a party for Pride 2 years ago.
Okay.
Which that might be what you're thinking of.
Maybe that's what it is.
I forget.
Because I was almost in Boston that year.
but we do, yeah, I try and raise money for stuff as often as I possibly can. I'm a gay man. So a lot of the stuff that we're raising money for at Shoreleaf is often LGBTQ+ queer oriented or woman oriented. We're, you know, Heather, one of the partners that owns all the restaurants, is a woman. So we often care about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and Shoreleaf has a charitable component that we've now attached to it. just as part of our ongoing
existence. Awesome.
So we'll be making donations as often as we possibly can.
We do that at my bar too. We're a female owned and operated bar, which in LA County, there are 8, which is kind of insane.
Is that true?
8 or 9 at last count. And now it's everything changes with pandemic. I'm not sure, you know, how many have closed or if anyone else is venturing to open up, but it's a pretty big county. So even if we've made it up to 10, that's like kind of insane.
That's terrible. Wild.
It's just one of those things. And it's something that people don't think about unless you know, bring some awareness to it. And then some other women will start. And a good friend of mine started a pop-up here. We couldn't do it during pandemic, called a camp out. And it's basically highlighting LGBTQA bartenders, you know, in the area. Like, where are my people at? Here they are. So you have to do stuff like that in order for people to, you know, just be alerted to it, be aware of it. Like you were saying with the tiki thing, it's all education. This is education. Yeah. And, you know, people either want to do the work or they don't. And after a while, I think if they hear it enough, it's going to sink in.
I hope so.
I know. I hope so. Fingers crossed. So we have to talk about music a little bit too. Now, I don't know what your music nerdiness is. Did you ever spend any time DJing out there in the world?
No DJing. So my music nerdiness is really more of, I'm a big dork. I'm a marching band kid.
Oh, I love when I meet marching band people, not because I was one, just because it's so honest.
So I grew up playing the saxophone.
Ooh, cool.
I played the saxophone. I still play. I'm not very good anymore. I don't play that often. My neighbors probably really hate me, but I grew up playing, the saxophone. I really wanted to go to college for music, and I had a college advisor that talked me out of it. Mm. Which looking back, I'm always like, what was that guy's deal?
I know, crushing your dreams.
I wanted to go to school for music out of going to school for music. but I like where I landed, so I'm totally fine. But I was a marching band kid because that's what my high school had. My high school was a very regionally competitive marching band. So we competed for a couple months every year, every weekend. So doing like 10-minute field shows. We performed at just one football game every year. We performed at the homecoming game, and that was it. So we did no football games.
Wow.
We just competed. We were just a competitive marching band.
Wow.
So it was pretty cool. It was, when I say regionally competitive, I mean, it was mostly just the Northeast. But in the Northeast, my, two of the years I was in marching band, we were first and second place at nationals.
Wow. That's
which was pretty wild. It was a big commitment. It was a lot of time of my life looking back that I spent walking back and forth playing the same piece of music for months and months and months on end. But because of marching band, I was in marching band, I was in concert band, I was in wind ensemble, I was in jazz band, I played in pit orchestra for the musicals. So I'm a huge musical nerd. Playing the saxophone, I'm a huge just jazz fan. That is what I'm most often listening to on my own.
Well, who got you started? Why did you choose saxophone?
It's actually a funny story. I did not pick the saxophone. I grew up in a fairly musical family. My mom, was a piano player, and my dad's dad, was a completely self-taught, only by ear, keys player. So he played organ, piano. He was super, super talented.
So you have the music in you is what you're saying.
a little bit, I guess. I wish I stuck with it a little bit harder, but yeah, a little bit, I guess. I grew up in New York City. And I was lucky enough to go to New York City public schools. And at the time when I was in elementary school, they used the recorder to kind of screen people for musical talent. And I guess I was good enough at the recorder that they were like, you can be in band. So in the fourth and fifth grade, God bless his heart, we had a music teacher who would travel from school to school and do band classes for fourth and fifth graders. And he would just listen to 30 kids squawking on instruments that they didn't know how to play and teach them how to play hot cross buns. I do not know how public school music teachers do it. But then, so I was assigned the trombone. And the trombone was not a cool enough instrument for me as a kid. I wanted to be where all of the girls in my class wanted to play the clarinet. They all got the clarinet, and I wanted to be with them. So I remember going home, I think in like actual tears, like being like, I don't want to play the trombone. And looking back, I'm like, the trombone probably would have been really cool. but it was only assigned to me because I'm tall. I'm 6'2". I've always been super tall. So I had long arms. And my dad called the school's music teacher and was like, hey, I think my son should be playing an instrument, but I really don't think it's going to stick if it's the trombone. And he like begged him. And he was like, well, every single kid in this class wants to play the clarinet. So I can't give him the clarinet. I'm sorry, but I'll teach him how to play the saxophone. And so that's how I came to play the saxophone. And down the road, I actually ended up learning how to play the clarinet. I taught myself how to play the clarinet. anyway, because the saxophone and the clarinet are so similar. And I wanted to play in the pit orchestras. And when you play, at least at a high school level, when you play in pit orchestra, you're often assigned like a book that says like read five. I always played read five. So read five meant that you had to play the tenor saxophone, the baritone saxophone, and the bass clarinet.
Wow.
So I would always play all three of those in the pit.
That's amazing. I love that. But I'm still laughing at the fact that you just got trombone because you had long arms.
Yep.
The gangly kid gets like, that because you could reach it.
That I distinctly remember them saying like, oh, you need to play the trombone because we never have anyone long enough to play the trombone. And I had to carry it home too. So I had this like heavy trombone.
Yeah, big
and I
long
was like,
case.
Oh, everybody else has this like tiny little clarinet case or the flute. Meanwhile, after I learned how to play the alto saxophone, I switched to tenor saxophone. And then I basically immediately switched to learning how to play baritone saxophone. So I basically was carrying like a coffin full of metal.
Yeah, I was going to say.
School every day.
But saxophone is cool. I mean, I always thought saxophone was cool. I had a friend who played saxophone in marching band. But it was football game style. But this was also in the 80s. So there were lots of ska bands around. So he had some
inspiration. Oh my God. I played in a ska band in high school.
Right?
We thought it was really funny to name our ska band B is for Blues. So I played in a ska band in high school. I have a deep fondness of ska music.
Mm-hmm. Which era of ska music though? I mean, probably that 80s stuff is close to your heart, but you know.
I would be hard pressed looking back as a high school student, like illegally downloading ska music off of Napster. Mm-hmm. I think I took what I could get.
Yeah. Have you furthered your education today? Are you all into Rocksteady now? Or
not quite. I think I stopped listening to ska music after high school. Someone recently described ska music to me as the music that children hear in their head when they get extra chicken nuggets with their order. And
pick it up.
I was like, yes, I do think that that's actually that they hear in their head when they
you've got to have a soft spot still for some ska though. Like,
I do.
Makes you happy when it pops up on your shuffle?
I'm pretty jazzed anytime Real Big Fish pops up on my shuffle.
Yeah.
I'm definitely pretty jazzed anytime Real Big Fish pops up. That was like a first high school love.
Of jazz music, so you're more sophisticated with your
more sophisticated
sax
yes
playing.
Of course
yeah. And what is it now? What is your saxophone music of choice these days?
I mean like every person who learned how to play the tenor saxophone, I'm a huge John Coltrane fan. A Love Supreme is my favorite album of all time.
There's a reason why everybody loves him. I mean,
there's a reason. I listen to A Love Supreme on repeat. I'm a huge Sonny Rollins fan. His Saxophone Colossus album is something that's often on repeat for me. Growing up, I always wanted to sound like Stan Getz. I don't like now. I'm
can
like,
anyone do that though?
Like nobody can sound like Stan Getz.
No, I mean, that's one of those things. It's just such a unique sound. I don't know if it ranges from like the way it was recorded, the room it was in, whatever it is, just being in Brazil. I don't know what it is, but it just does have such a distinct feel and distinct sound.
Yeah, you know Stan Getz when Stan Getz
second
is on.
Comes on. Absolutely.
Lester Young. I listen to a lot of Lester Young. Yeah, I love all the old school wonderful. Saxophonists. I love Grace Kelly, who is like a newer, she does a lot of horn music with a lot of like a younger take on it, which I really, really love. I listen to a ton of, I'm a big fan of New Orleans brass band music.
Oh, yeah.
So I listen to a lot of, you know, Hot 8 brass bands, Rebirth, a lot of that kind of stuff.
It's always fun. Always fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a way that works for me that you fell in love with tropical drinks and kind of the celebratory nature of those drinks, because a lot of that music, I mean, of course, there's contemplative stuff, but if you listen to Stan Getz, you're transported, you know, you're listening to that New Orleans stuff, you're transported. If you get this blue drink with an umbrella in it, you're transported. So what are your 100%. Pairings? Yeah, right. What are your pairings then? What's your tropical drink with what album? You know, do you have stuff like
that? Oh my God. I should absolutely be on that. And I have to say I've never considered
it. You haven't done it yet? Yeah. Hey, when you open back up into the world.
When I'm at home, more often than not, if I'm having any kind of sort of tropical drink at home, I'm not really crushing ice that often at home.
Right.
I'm pretty lazy about my at-home drinking. Uh-huh. I am a big fan of rum agricole. I'm a huge fan of Martinique rum. Mm-hmm. And it's usually, I like a tea punch at home, just for the simplicity of, you know, being able to cut off a piece of lime and just make a quick cocktail.
Throw it in there. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Throw it in there. So that is my listening to music pairing is almost always a tea punch, because it's just, I always have agricole. We always have limes around.
So whatever you're listening to, you're having tea punch with it. That does go with just about anything though. I mean, it's essentially sitting home and drinking a shot. You've just gussied it up a touch.
But what's going on in LA? Are the restaurants open or bars open?
Supposedly June 15th is when our state will lift the mask mandate, and it'll be up to it'll be up to the restaurants to determine what their capacities will be. That's my understanding. Our place, we're fortunate, we have a big outside patio we were able to create in the parking lot, which we're just going to keep as long as we can, because our bar is very small. And we have much more capacity outside, and we're in LA. It's beautiful. You know, it's nice and doesn't get too hot. Doesn't get too cool. Well, it does get too hot, but as long as we're not on fire, it's okay.
Shore leave is the same situation. We were able to open a patio, which is, I mean, the patio is like less than a third of our footprint downstairs. However, during COVID, I mean, our bar manager, we opened the downstairs space whenever the weather isn't really cooperating. So if it's going to be a really rainy day, we'll open up downstairs, but we largely are just doing the upstairs space, partially because of staffing. But as our bar manager there says to folks, you know, her name is Hannah. Hannah always says, everyone's been inside all winter.
Like,
why are we going to lock everyone in the basement when we have this patio?
Right. My friends in New York, they'd be out there. They're like, blizzard just happened. Here we are outside having a hot toddy. And I'm just like,
I know it's wild. Boston had some of that. My partner lives in New York. So I'm in New York a ton. Mm-hmm. And I am consistently shocked at how
hardy,
how heavily and how hardy New Yorkers are about sitting on patios. I'm like, it is snowing.
Yes.
It is actively snowing onto your food.
And they're like, oh, that's okay. There's a little thing over me. I'm like, no. I mean, I'm a born and raised Californian, which means I am a wuss. And it's like, what? It's 62 degrees. Where's my trench coat? You know? I've been to New York in February. So I know it gets cold and I survived and went out and did things, but I'm just like, we are so fortunate here that we could do this. And so how about Boston? What's the expectations for you guys?
Yeah. So the state and the city lifted all mandates on restaurants on the 29th, was just this past Saturday. So places are definitely
easing back in.
We didn't increase our capacity really because we don't really have enough staff to, you know, with all of our, so So for instance, with Bar Mitzana had one patio that was out front of the restaurant, but since COVID, we've been able to add two side patios on both sides of the restaurant. So our capacity outdoors has like more than doubled the capacity of the restaurant. Wow. So if we increased our indoor capacity, we would just never be able to keep up. So, so we haven't really increased our indoor capacity unless it's raining, and then we'll increase the indoor capacity to keep up with the reservations that we had already had. But yeah, it's up to individual establishments if they want to have a mask rule. But nobody's required to wear a mask if they're vaccinated. And it's interesting. It's interesting to see everyone paving their own way about it.
It's confusing to customers, and I understand that. But you know, we just have to, let's cross our fingers that respect becomes a thing. It remains a thing. My God.
I'm always crossing my fingers on that, but
right? And I would recommend to you that, you know, when everything finally feels like it's all open again, your celebratory menu is going to be your booze and music pairing. You'll get with your drinks, like your bossa nova cocktail. What's that going to be?
Yeah.
Something wonderful there. Cachaça, you know, here you go. Yep. I'm sure you could do some fun with that.
The really fun thing of removing tiki as like a thematic element in the restaurant is how much it opens us to stuff that I feel more comfortable incorporating into Shore Leave now, because it is not necessarily tiki to have Caribbean cocktails on the menu, but and I also felt very protective. I was in that tiki camp of people who are very protective over what tiki is. So people will be like, oh, can I get a painkiller? And I'm like, I can make you a painkiller, but the painkiller is not
have
a tiki
hussers.
Drink.
Oh, I see.
Painkiller is a Caribbean cocktail. Yeah. It's not a tiki drink. And now I'm like, I don't care. You want a tea punch? You want a caipirinha? You want a mojito? Like, we can do all of this, all these tropical drinks till the cows come home. Because I love those too.
Yeah.
They just were never really on our menus because they weren't tiki.
Yeah. And now you can come up with some mezcal drinks. You know, you can do whatever you want in there. Just does it have some tropical punch in there?
We've always had a lot of original cocktails, but it's going to be fun to see the many places that we can go, especially I love the Caribbean. I think anyone who opens a tiki bar loves rum for the most part.
I mean,
you know, some people do it because they like the shirts and the vibe and the music and all that jazz, but a lot of people do it because they love rum. And that was kind of where I came from on it is I love rum. For me, it's the most versatile spirit. I always want to put rum in people's hands and kind of convince them that they love rum, because
rum is an insane category. It's insane. I don't know how to get a grasp on it, because, you know, then there's agriculture.
Drink it.
Yeah, no,
just got to keep drinking it.
Boy, I have had so much rum, I'm just like, oh my God. Yeah. I've learned so much, and I feel like I've barely scratched the surface and have been involved in this world and for several years, and have really good friends that are like, they're judges at Miami Rum Festival or whatever. And I'm still like, when I think I know something, I feel like I don't know a thing. It's just constantly evolving.
I mean, and also that world
and trying to remember it all. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also so much is being, now that we're in this like global market where stuff is being exported from virtually everywhere to virtually everywhere, we're able to see a lot of things like the Clarins that are coming out of Haiti.
Oh God.
Did not see before a few years ago. I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't know it existed either. So Kate Perry
brought it to her, right? Beautiful spirits. Yeah. I love Kate. And she is doing such an incredible job as an ambassador, but further, I mean, she's such an educator and she just does it so naturally. And it's really incredible. I saw you had Zan.
I love Zan and Ian. Those guys. Yeah. And that's something that's fun to do for me in the summer when I focus on tropical stuff. I'm like, let's get some rum people in here because there's so much to learn. It's endless. It's just endless to me.
Every time I think that I've done more than scratch the surface, the pool of water reflects back at me and is like, you dumb idiot.
Right.
You dumb idiot. You don't know anything.
Totally.
Go home and start over. One of my favorite moments is when like the bar is full and a song comes on that everybody knows but didn't know they wanted to listen to, and they're all singing along. So we have the playlist has a lot of those. Kind of like, oh, I haven't heard this song since 2001, but I know.
Can you remember one of those? I know it's totally on the cuff, and we're not.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm not good at quiz shows. let's see. Well, we play TLC's Waterfalls on loop in the bathroom.
Oh my God, in the bathroom.
Yes. So our PR company has been, or not our PR company. Everyone that works in the company was like, what are we going to do in the bathrooms? Well, the bathrooms just need to be more fun. What's up with the bathrooms? So I bought projector lights that make the entire bathroom feel like there's water running down the walls.
We have those in our bathrooms too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And now the bathrooms just play songs that have to do with water on loop, but it's generally just one song the entire night that's played on loop. So it's been Under the Sea before. It's been like pirate shanties, but it is often TLC's Waterfalls. And one of my favorite things is that so many people come out of the bathroom and they're like, it's not a problem, but I don't know if you know that the bathroom is just playing TLC Waterfalls on loop.
And you're like, oh, thanks. Okay, enjoy.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's on purpose. You're welcome. We really wanted you to know how long you were in there for, measured by how many times you've heard
Waterfalls. Well, that sounds like a good place to kind of pull this all together. So if you want to let everybody know like where they can find you or any of your bars, I'm sure there are a bazillion Instagram handles. Like if people are coming to Boston,
they can find me I'm on Instagram. It's easy. It's just my name. It's at Ryan Lotz. L-O-T-Z is how you spell my last name. Mm-hmm. And all of the bars are linked in my profile, so you can find them, but it's at Bar Mitzana. It's at Shorely BOS, at Black Lamb BOS. And I think No Relation is at No Relation Boston, mm-hmm. or it might be at No Relation BOS, but it is in my profile.
And there's all
that. That's where you can find me. We're in Boston. We're in the South End.
Come on over and have a drink with an umbrella in it.
Come on over and have a drink with an umbrella in it. Cool. Maybe if you ask nice, we'll light it on fire. It might be on fire anyway.
Well, don't go anywhere, but thank you so much for taking this time to talk with us about your tropical space and everything else around it. How to make Absolutely. Boston tropical, basically.
I know. Well, that was part of us wanting to open a kind of a bar that was an escape, was mm-hmm. winter in Boston. Winter in Boston is long. And when you're inside of it, it already feels long. Mm-hmm. And then when you're near the end of it, it somehow finds a way to be longer. I mean, we just had it's 78 degrees here today. And just 3 days ago, it was in the 40s.
Yeah.
In May.
Yeah.
It frequently snows in October here, which is wild. So,
you need to have your permanent summer somewhere.
We really wanted to be a permanent vacation. Yeah. Just somewhere where you could always feel a little warmer.
Awesome.
Big, big, big hugs to Ryan, and thank you so much for doing the podcast today. I hope that summer in Boston is amazing, and you guys remember to go check out his Instagram at Ryan Lotz, and Shoreleave is there at Shoreleave BOS Boston, and there's a whole bunch more if you jump over to Ryan's Instagram page. All the other bars are there too. So, what else? The Spotify, of course. Yeah, he gave us a playlist and it's got all sorts of stuff on it. Of course, it has jazz on it, but it's got more. Cyndi Lauper, anyone? So make sure you head on over to my Facebook page and check out the link for that. Thank you, Ryan. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street, in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, Search SheBMO on Spotify, SHEBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.